This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening. It's the evening edition. You're with Caroline and Ezra. And of course, International Women's Day was yesterday, March 8th. And we're speaking about gender equality. And of course, it's an ancient, never-ending battle that women all around the world face. This problem is also a major barrier to human development.
Yeah, all too often, women and girls are discriminated against in health, education, political representation, labor markets, etc., with negative repercussions for development of their capabilities and their freedom of choice.
And so today we have in the studio with us is Michelle Giles McDonough, United Nations Resident Coordinator in Malaysia, to share with us about her thoughts on the challenges facing women and girls in Malaysia. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Ezra.
So just to kick things off, tell us a little bit about yourself and how long you've been working with the United Nations and what your role is as the UN Resident Coordinator in Malaysia.
I have been working with the United Nations since 1999. It seems really long. I think that's about 15 years by now. Quite strange for a former trade lawyer who is used to probably much more short stints
right.
in private sector employment. But it has been a challenging and a very demanding journey, one that's very satisfying, which is probably why I'm still here 15 years later. I arrived in Malaysia about a year and a half ago. My role here is I am the United Nations Resident Coordinator in that capacity. My role is to pull together all of the 17 development agencies of the UN that work alongside Malaysia's partners in its development process. I am also the resident representative of the United Nations Development Program, UNDP, one of the 17 agencies, as well as the representative of the UN Population Fund. So it is quite a full agenda.
It certainly does sound like it. All right. So perhaps you can elaborate for us a little bit what the functions of the program are.
The functions of...
The United Nations Development Program.
The UNDP is the largest development agency. It forms the base of the development system. We work across many sectors. Our primary focus here is on improving the socioeconomic conditions of people, enhancing well-being, so quite aligned to the priorities that the government has set out. Mm-hmm. We also invest our energies in supporting the sustainability agenda of the country in terms of improving environmental management, conservation, preservation, looking at valuing ecosystem services, how to find ways of balancing conservation with development, and securing the biodiversity of what is in Malaysia, one of the 10 most, 10 megadiverse biodiverse countries in the world. So, so we work on affordable housing. We work on, we've spent quite a bit of time looking at issues towards the design of Malaysia's next five-year development plan, which is quite a turning point for the country as it looks to breaking out of the ranks of middle-income countries and moving into developed status by 2020. That will call for some real game changers and doing things differently in order to reach that target along an accelerated path.
It sounds like there's so much to do when it comes to realigning so many different agencies and stakeholders when it comes to the realities of what's on the ground with whatever ideas and initiatives and policies that are in place. What are the strategies to get started on these kind of sort of movements?
I think in terms of development, it's always important to operate at multiple levels. Very important in terms of defining the ecosystem in which we all live, in the sense of what are the laws, policies, frameworks that set the context in which we all have to live together as citizens and to progress together as citizens. So that's where we do quite a bit of policy support and policy advice work. At the same time, you do need to deal with people's pressing needs. And it is important to find that balance with actual projects and programs on the ground. In the case of Malaysia as a country that is much more advanced along the development pathway, we do less and less at that operational level. We're quite selective about what we do, where we tend to focus more on pilot testing as a way of signaling new policy directions and new legislative directions that maybe the country should consider.
All right, we'll be continuing our discussion with the UN Resident Coordinator in Malaysia, Michelle Giles McDonough. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. It's the evening edition. You're with Caroline and Ezra, and in the studio with us is the United Nations Resident Coordinator in Malaysia, Michelle Giles McDonough. We're speaking about, I guess, the challenges facing women and girls in Malaysia, but also, I guess, in the region as well.
Yeah. Now, Michelle, I understand you're also a representative not just for Malaysia, but for Singapore and Brunei. And earlier we were talking about the needs of an individual country, and you said that Malaysia is pretty advanced in that we're quite far along in that basic needs are met. I'm just wondering how Malaysia weighs up, because our needs, I would imagine, are very, very different from the needs of a country like Singapore, for example.
Yeah, Malaysia is an upper middle income country that aims to be a high income developed nation by 2020. As an upper middle income country, what that means is that it has already gone quite a significant ways along that development journey. Basic needs are satisfied for the vast majority of the population. If you look at Malaysia, for example, from, you know, independence or 1957, 1959, where there was a poverty rate above 50%, to now a poverty rate of 1% or less, when you look at it in aggregate terms, most people would say, well, you know, what more could there be to do? But if you approach development as the government here does, and as UNDP certainly does in the UN system, that it is about continual improvement in the conditions of people's lives and people being able to fully achieve their potential and have the full realization of their rights. If that is the approach, then the idea is about how do we make sure that the progress that Malaysia has achieved so far is spread more equitably across the population? How do we make sure that these benefits also are spread to the most vulnerable groups that still remain? So when you're in a country like Malaysia, you need to look, poverty is relative, deprivation is relative. So while we may not be talking about extreme poverty, we're looking at deprivations as it relates to health, as it relates to education, as it relates to access to decent jobs, as it relates to, and in a context appropriate for Malaysia. So you need to take a much more multidimensional perspective, and one that is appropriate for this country where it is and where it wants to go.
And in your experience of, I guess, observing some of the countries that you're overseeing, are there trends and observations about these sort of middle-income countries that are heading into sort of that high-income status where there's that sort of obstacle they just can't push through quite yet and takes a longer time to fulfill?
You know, well, many focus on what we call the middle-income trap. And really the way I look at it is when a country gets to this stage, they're really now about to embark upon what I consider to be the hardest part of this journey, to developed status. As I said, basic needs are satisfied. Much of the infrastructure development is already in place. And really, when you get to this last mile agenda, you're looking more at the values and the principles on which society is organized to ensure that the benefits of progress really are shared by all. At that stage, the questions aren't so simple anymore, because we now really have to dig deep to our core, and we have to re-examine our value systems and our principles. We have to, and if for example, if you look at it in the context, it is International Women's Day yesterday. If you look at it in the context of women's lives, we're going to need to look at cultural patterns, norms, stereotypes, and how these limit economic participation, political participation, achievements in health, achievements in education. These are more complicated questions to answer. And so it's never fast, but it is important to do. We know it's not easy work, but it must be done if we do believe in the dignity and the worth of each and every human being.
So if we look at it in the context of Malaysia, women's participation in the workforce, there have been some gains, relatively speaking, I guess, over the past few years. What are some of the positives and the negatives that we can draw from at this point in time?
I think there are a lot of positives. The positives are that, for example, women's attainment in education, the gender gap in education has almost been closed. Mm. The gender gap in health has almost been closed. We still have big gaps on labor market participation, as well as political participation and participation in decision-making fora. So that is where the unfinished business for Malaysia sits. Mm. And, you know, for a country like Malaysia, where we have women, you know, we've closed the gap on primary, secondary education, and in fact, we have more women enrolled in tertiary education.
Yeah.
We need to look at why women are not in the labor force. We need to look at why, because education is largely public funded in this country, why then are we not getting the returns on that investment in the economy through the participation of these educated women in the labor force? This needs to be solved both in terms of increasing the pace of growth, increasing the, you know, the potential impact it will have on GDP and performance of the country.
What insights can you share with us on why you know all that isn't moving along as quickly as you would like it to? What are the biggest barriers in your opinion?
You know, right now, Malaysia's labor force participation rate is about 47.9%. And the government has set a target to increase that rate, I believe, to about 55%.
Yeah.
Which is, you know...
We'll have more women working than
quite
men.
Quite commendable.
Yes.
But I think one of the issues is to note that actually the rate really has remained fairly stagnant between this 44-47% over a long period of time. Mm. This suggests something. It suggests that we have an ecosystem problem.
it's something systemic in the whole ecosystem.
It suggests that perhaps the legal and policy framework needs strengthening, that we need new measures, new mechanisms in place. We need adjustments in existing measures. It also suggests that we do need to look at the obligation states have under the CEDAW Convention, the Convention to Eliminate Discrimination Against Women, the obligation states have to modify social and cultural patterns that inhibit the possibility of achieving equality between men and women.
Mm. We're going to be continuing our discussion about the role and the role and importance of women in our society. We'll be right back after this. BFM 89.9. Good evening, I'm Ezra Zayed.
Good evening, I'm Caroline O.
And this evening we're speaking to United Nations Resident Coordinator in Malaysia, Michelle Giles McDonough. Of course, yesterday was March 8th in conjunction with International Women's Day. We're speaking about the challenges facing women and girls in Malaysia. You know, we were speaking earlier about, the legal and social and economic norms within the ecosystem that are perhaps providing some obstacles for women in terms of advancing beyond secondary or tertiary education but into the workforce. Is there discrimination that's happening that's concerning, in your opinion, when it comes to these areas?
Well, I think one way to answer that is to find out from women why they're not in the workforce. Mm. Mm. Why do we go to university, but yet still we're not in the labor market? Mm. UNDP did some work very recently, and we found that the three main reasons that women don't enter the labor force, the first, and not surprisingly, was parenthood and childcare responsibilities and duties, and I will come back to that. The second reason in Malaysia's context was they leave the workforce for marriage purposes. And the third is that, and quite strikingly, is that their husbands have requested that they not work. So I think because in each country, I mean, you do need to look at the specifics of why people are not there. Mm-hmm. I think if we take the first issue on parenthood, you know, the UN Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, it includes a commitment on the part of member states and an obligation to ensure that systems are in place and adjustments are made that can enable women to have equal access to economic opportunities, and that once they have that access, that there are equitable outcomes in these opportunities, mm-hmm. and that also we can sustain those over time. Yeah. So women, for example, you know, you when you look at the participation rate of Malaysia, in the early years, 19 to like 29, you actually have women entering the labor force. Then you get a dip, a huge dip at around, you know, 20, 25 through 34, normally the childbearing years. But unlike other countries where you then see the curve gradually go back up, you don't get that rise as much in Malaysia. So we have issues.
So they call it the double dip.
Right. So you have issues then about retention. You have issues about reintegration for those that leave and how they come back in. And that has implications for our understanding of maternity as a social function and the fact then that the burden men and women need to equally share the care in a family situation. And once you get that principle established that care needs to be shared equally, then you then need to have policies in place. You need to have childcare centers. The coverage needs to be appropriate. The cost needs to be addressed. You know, you need to have flexible work arrangements. Yeah. All of these things that enable women to stay.
Absolutely. And, you know, these are things that most parents, I think, you know, women, mothers on the street listening can definitely relate to. But is there some sort of timeline that you work with to be able to put these things in place? Because it feels as though we've committed to it in spirit, but that's pretty much, you know, where it ends.
Well, timelines in the sense of we've just set the Millennium Development Goals, where we set a 15-year time frame by which we wanted to see progress in countries against some specific targets. Mm-hmm. We're coming to the end of the Millennium Development Goal period at the end of this year, 2015. Malaysia is currently looking at its scorecard over the 15 years as against the Millennium Development Goals to see how much was achieved and how much remains. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the global community is working on a new development agenda, a new set of sustainable development goals, where citizens around the world have already made it quite clear that gender has to be at the heart of these next 15 years. Yes, progress was made up through 2015, but the progress needs to be accelerated, particularly for women and girl children, and we need to see a much faster pace in all countries. So I think that's as much as I can say on a time frame, but given that Malaysia has set itself a 2020 target of developed status, I expect that in the next 5 years, what we are aiming for is a real acceleration of progress along all development indicators.
Oh, we better get moving.
Well, Michelle, I wanted to speak to you, about women's rights and gender equality in Malaysia. According to the World Economic Forum's Global Gender Gap Report 2014, it was released in October last year, Malaysia's ranking in the global gender gap ladder continued to slide. It's now at 107th spot out of 142 countries. What can we get out of this particular ranking? And maybe just to provide some context to that as to whether is it better than we actually think it is, or is it actually quite
worse
bad
than we think it is?
Well, I think the ranking is done according to specific indicators. And the UNDP does a similar ranking called the Gender Inequality Index, which looks at some similar composite indicators. Now, I think when you look across the performance of Malaysia as a whole, when you look at the detailed achievement, you will see that progress has been made, as we discussed earlier, along health, education, etc. But when you look at the remaining indicators, which probably account for the ranking, it, I think, just points very clearly to the work that remains to be done for this country. So it's not just the in terms of economic participation and improving the participation rate of women in the labor force, but again, when you come back to issues around marriage and family life, where equality within the institution of marriage and within family life and how that plays out in broader society still needs to be addressed. There are quite traditional understandings of the role and responsibilities of women still. There are, and these traditional views do limit the possibility of achieving equality as defined under the convention. Very often, you will hear in discourse that culture and religious identity is important to the cohesion, the value system of the society, etc. But under the convention, under the UN convention, it is recognized that in order to deal with entrenched inequalities, it is important to see modification in social and cultural patterns if we are ever going to achieve the principle of equality to which we committed. And it's really important that we understand that equality is not just about formal equality. It's not just about that we have some laws and policies in place, but it has to be equality in the way women and men experience their lives, the way boys and girls experience their lives, so at a substantive level.
What indicators would be substantive for us to be able to gauge?
So, for example, even if you look at the indicators from the World Economic Forum report, it looks at parental authority in marriage. It looks at parental authority after divorce. It looks at inheritance rights. Mm-hmm. It looks at nationality rights. It looks at, because still, nationality of children will be determined, it looks at domestic violence. It looks at early marriage. So there are a range of other issues that really define the space in which women live and exercise economic, political, social and other functions.
We'll be speaking after this with Michelle Giles McDonough, the UN Resident Coordinator in Malaysia, about the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, or CEDAW. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. It's the evening edition. You're with Caroline and Ezra, and in the studio with us is Michelle Giles McDonough, the United Nations Resident Coordinator in Malaysia. We're speaking about the many challenges facing women and girls in Malaysia. Michelle, I wanted to ask you a question about the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, or CEDAW. So I think Malaysia, of the nine, we've ratified only three. How compatible are some of these conventions with existing legislation here in Malaysia?
So it is our hope that several things will happen, because also treaty obligations don't become automatically law in Malaysia. So there is a need for national enabling legislation to make the commitments fully be integrated into domestic law.
In international diplomacy, when countries say, we have reservations, is there a reasons bracket as to why, countries decide to go with a particular reservation? Do they have to sort of elaborate on that point?
Yes. Malaysia has indicated that its reservations are their primarily because of what they see as potential conflict with Islamic principles. Mm-hmm. And yes.
And so on that front, there are concerns about raising instability and issues related to that, I guess.
I don't know about instability. I think they feel that it is in conflict with principles that they hold dear.
Right.
This is where the the convention really gives, and CEDAW is unique in this way, and I think it really gives formal recognition to the influence of culture and tradition on restricting women's enjoyment of their fundamental rights. And therefore, it puts an obligation upon states, to work towards, as I said earlier, modification of social and cultural patterns. Mm. Because the convention also says that change in the traditional role of men, as well as the role of women in society and in the family, is needed if you are to achieve full equality of men and women. So it recognizes the influence of culture and tradition, but it also recognizes that there needs to be modification along the way, and that countries need to work towards this modification if we're going to realize equality for women.
Mm. How do the dynamics change when, I guess, countries are left to their own devices to mm-hmm. improve upon their mm-hmm. existing practices and legislation? External sort of organizations and bits of legislation will provide some pressure, but what usually is the turning point in your observation of different countries that have managed to make that leap?
You know, well, there is a monitoring mechanism built into the convention, and so as part of a global community where you have made a commitment, I think all states, you know, want to demonstrate that they are working towards achieving their commitments. And, you know, in development, we know you don't just flip switches and things happen. We know countries have to make investments and move progressively toward toward achieving a particular state. I think in terms of the monitoring mechanism, what we want to see is that there is determined movement in that direction. Malaysia's, under the convention, there is a four-year reporting requirement. Malaysia submitted its last report on the CEDAW. Some years back, reporting has not been also regular, and that is the opportunity at which, there is a discussion and a review of the efforts that the country has been making, recognition of their achievements, but also some recommendations as to how to address the issues that still need to be tackled. On a comparative scale, I think certainly you will see there are countries where, you know, there have been the investments as Malaysia has made, where you see, you know, gaps narrowed on health, education, etc. And you also see higher labor force participation, for example. And that would tend to be countries where these systems are in place, where there are flexible working arrangements, where there are options for childcare that are cost-effective for families, where tax structures don't disincentivize either entry or re-entry into the market, and where there's better progress, for example, along retention policies and these kinds of issues. Then you have, you know, countries like Malaysia, where strong investments have been made, but you're not seeing the full return on the investment because as fast progress on these areas have not been made. So then you have countries that lag behind Malaysia. So it's a question of what is your unfinished business? How determinedly do we want to tackle that unfinished business, and how fast?
And in conjunction with International Women's Day, which was yesterday, what are your hopes and aspirations for, you know, Malaysia and, of course, the problems and challenges facing women and girls?
You know, well, certainly what I would like to see is that we do work towards greater equity and greater equality, actually, in marriage and family life situations. I would like to see, because also I am a working woman, and so I understand the frustrations, and I would like to see policies in place that enable women to enter, stay, leave and re-enter a market, that there are not restrictions in promotion policies or the conditions for promotion policies. You have issues like, well, you need to have how many years of unbroken service? Well, if you enter as a woman in your childbearing years, chances of how many years of unbroken service really impacts also on promotion. You raise this because we have a huge dearth of women in decision-making positions. Now, if they enter and they're not promoted, how do they get to decision-making positions? So you have to look at the entire chain and look at the enabling and disenabling policies and arrangements that are in place for women.
push through that last mile for women.
Absolutely. Michelle, thank you very much for joining us in the studio. We've been speaking to the United Nations Resident Coordinator in Malaysia, Michelle Giles McDonough. If you missed any part of this program, you can download the podcast at www.bfm.my. It's BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.